to finish up real quick with incredible investigative journalist Brianna Morello and host of the American Journal weekday mornings, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., right before my show with the American Journal. Now, Harris has moved on, doing a fabulous job with the War Room. We could have correspondents in the White House. They already invited us. We had them before. We could have it in the Pentagon. We are been in bankruptcy. We don't have the money, okay? And so when Owen quit, we were able to, with the money we had, you know, bring another host. She's doing a great job. So to the left in the Washington Post attacking everybody else, oh, my God, an evil InfoWars-connected person in there. The Pentagon, half of them are listening right now. The White House Situation Room listens to the show. Everybody's got the show up. Steve Bannon has it up. The idea that you guys are keeping us out of something, you wouldn't sign the agreement to stop not wearing badges and wandering into classified areas. And so it's good for them to bring in new media. And I'm hearing independent media ask such incredible questions, the Gateway Pundit, Lindell TV, Newsmax, all of them. And so I can't wait till you're up there. You're still going to be hosting here, you know, double duty. But getting into them going completely ape over this and throwing a giant temper tantrum, showing even the Washington Post and others don't even know how this works. And so tell us about it.
Well, they keep calling us like MAGA reporters or journalists or influencers making our way into the Pentagon. The reality of it is I have been actually fair when it comes to criticizing the Pentagon, and they know that. But I reach out for comment before I have an opinion on something just to make sure it's true. And there's been a couple of times when the mainstream media has put something out that's been inaccurate.
Really? I don't believe it.
I know, Alex. It's really hard to believe, but this is what's going on right now in the mainstream media. And hear me out, too. The worst part about all of this that I have to say is the simple fact that they have spent more time looking into my background, my credentials. I mean, they keep trying to call me a conspiracy theorist, even though I've broken some of the most important stories. And I have a corporate media background. But most importantly, I ditched all of that and was able to make it somehow on my own. They don't like that. The fact that I was the first one who had the cojones to talk about Tulsi Gabbard being added to a terror watch list. I broke that story, even told her team that she was added to the terror watch list for TSA. They didn't do that. The corporate media outlets had it before me, but they were too cowardly to report it because they didn't want to piss off the Biden regime. But I went forward and moved forward and reported that. So I have no problem being critical, though, of the current administration as well. So they're not doing this to kiss butt with us. They are doing this because they want new faces in there. Now, we've been discriminated against when it comes to the First Amendment. Under the Biden regime, I'd send emails. They never would respond to my emails. I actually have two lawsuits that I'm personally paying right now against TSA and the Veterans Affairs for how they targeted J6ers and so much more. I actually just won my TSA lawsuit, so we're almost done. I'm going to close out that one soon. But the reality of it is the Biden regime violated our First Amendment rights when they didn't give us access into the Pentagon, into the White House, and into other agencies. So they want to sit there and they want to cry about us now having access. Well, truth be told, we should have had access a long time ago, and they never spoke up on our behalf. Also, to add this, as somebody who worked for Fox and was forced out of Fox Corp because I refused to take the jab, all of the mainstream media outlets, pretty much all of them, took money from HHS. The Biden regime gave them money to promote the jabs. They never disclosed that to their audience. They only had positive coverage of the jabs. Never gave them any of the medical background dangers of the jabs at all. They slanted their coverage. So when it comes to credibility in journalism, over these last 10 years, I've done a hell of a job. So they could piss off, Alex.
Well, you have. But again, they're the dinosaur media that's discredited, acting like they have the credibility. They say somebody's not credible. Everybody knows, oh, they say you're not credible? You must be. And again, the government has all these factions and groups, some good, some bad, some evil, some lazy. I get constant thank yous from the White House and the Pentagon. When I spotlight something I think is a problem, they go, hey, we were putting pressure on this. Thank you. Can you do more? There's good guys in there, good gals. We're there. We're all working together for the truth. People respect you when you expose real corruption that even ferrets out stuff of the Republicans. That's what we're doing. We are trying to purify ourselves here. Yeah. And people understand that. This isn't about taking score or political parties. It's about fixing the country.
Yeah, and I didn't need access to the Pentagon. Never asked for it, never needed it. We just now have it, which is great. I have got that as an independent journalist, and I'm honored to do just that. But the reality of it is that I've been breaking stories without access into the administration, to the current and previous. And so this is only going to help us out significantly.
Brianna Morello on X, at Brianna Morello. Incredible job. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Central, American Journal. Nick Fuentes, straight ahead. Share the live feeds now.
Methylene Red is the ultimate complement to Methylene Blue. It's like Batman and Robin, right? This is Robin. Okay, I just took this, and I only took three droppers full. And I feel like calm energy, if that makes sense. I feel like If I want to go think about something or go deep into something, I can do that right now. It's like a sour warhead, and it's like, oh my God. And then I'm like, oh wow, okay, I actually feel it. Same way you feel methylene blue, you feel this. So
look at this, look at it.
Here's your normal methylene blue, right? Look at methylene red. Dude, that's a freaking tank. If you're taking this, you really need this. It's like, you know how Big Pharma always tells you, hey, if you get, you know, this SSRI, you're going to need this to go with it. Well, this is the natural, more natural way to do it. You got methylene blue and you got methylene red. These complement each other and you need both of them. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today and get yours. And I think right now it's 50% off if you subscribe.
Eating bugs. He wants you eating ribeye with lobster with him. Trump doesn't want big giant wars. That's stupid. No, Klaus Schwab and King Charles and Barack Obama want you eating bugs while they eat ribeye because they're feudalist, greedy, hateful, demonic trash. And you don't hate them enough. And you don't support the people fighting for you enough. I'm not saying that to everybody, but in general, you don't detest these people enough, and you don't love the people fighting for you enough, because if you loved yourself, you would understand these people have a predatory hatred of you and your family. Just look at them. Look at Keir Starmer. Look at Macron. Look at these people. Look at Hillary Clinton. Just look at them. Look at George Soros. Look at Alexander Soros. Look! Their actions are pure evil, and they look like serial killers or something, because they are.
Did you let Alexander Soros babysit your daughter or son?
Married to Uba Abedin, the pedo handler? For Wiener, he's some bad hombres. El Diablo, that's the bad man right there. Your cells know that's an enemy. Your skin crawls, and they know your skin crawls. They hate themselves, and they hate you. They're projecting their hatred of themselves onto you. Well, guess what? I love myself, and I love you. And Trump loves himself, and he loves you. I love you. They hate you. Now start loving yourself or start being a slave. God, it's so simple. Ugh. You want about Nicholas J. Fuentes, but he's definitely on the cutting edge of culture. And I think what he does is very healthy, because the left and the ADL, the Southern Poverty Law Center, has become ultra super anti-Christian, anti-Catholic, anti-white. And the answer to that is not groveling to it. The answer is saying, I'm not going to kowtow to your brainwashing, and I'm going to call you on what you're doing. That's the antidote in the Overton window. Doesn't mean I agree with every cheeky or edgelord, you know, comment that, you know, Nick engages in. But I find Nick very entertaining. I've known Nick 9 years and, you know, liked him at first, thought he was smart, whatever. But I think he's matured a lot. And so you can't judge him for what he's doing when he is way more polished and less hateful in his delivery than Hakeem Jeffries or you know, any of the Democrats, the ADL, Jasmine Crockett, any of it. You just can't say, well, this is terrible, when he, on a scale of 1 to 10, they're a 10, he's like a 5. It just doesn't float. And the way to counter radical, you know, hatred and garbage is not running up a white flag. That said, I always want to show the rabbit trick here, okay? I'm not a magician. I show the tricks. And so I in my perspective, and I think Nick's overall agree with it, I know what he's doing, and I think it's healthy. But that's not the angle I go with. I go always with 35,000 foot view, and Nick's always done that some too, but I've really, because I'm a fan of the show, I watch it, large sections of it almost daily. Quite frankly, I get up at 4 or 5 a.m. so I can't usually catch it live. Sometimes I'm waiting around for it and don't get to see it, but I am a listener. And, as soon as the, Tucker Carlson interview dropped, I sat there and, you know, put my 8-year-old daughter to bed and then watched 2 hours of it, watch the next 30 minutes of the morning. And it was just, it was powerful. There was a few things in there that I don't want to spend the whole show debating, like Joseph Stalin's good person things, because I'm quite the historian Nick's not a slouch, but we'll get to that. But I don't want to miss the forest for the trees. I want to cover a lot in the next hour and a half with him ahead of all these other big guests we've got. I want to do his reflection on the Tucker thing and what it's like, you know, after the big beef with those guys, where that's going, and what he thought about visiting Maine. So cool up there. And then I want to get his take, because I follow a lot of him, but I didn't really know his take on Venezuela. I totally agree with his take on Venezuela. It's a realist take, not a neocon take. A lot of idiots don't understand that. This is American doctrine. This is back to what we're supposed to do. I want to look at that. Not trying to talk about myself in this, but it's a big deal. We get the Arctic Frost documents yesterday, hundreds of pages, without a warrant. There I am being totally surveilled by these people, which I already knew. And that was my point to Nick months ago, because we don't talk a lot on the phone. We text a couple times a week, and, you know, maybe every few weeks talk on the phone for a few minutes. He's not a big phone person, just like I'm not. But I've called him a few times over the years, and I've said, listen, the Republicans got their problems. We got a beachhead there. I said, the Democrats hate your ass. They may act like they like you as criticizing Trump. You've been targeted. Bill Barr, the documents came out 3 months ago, specifically on a list of only like 13, 14 people, had Nick above me on the list to be destroyed. Okay? When he was working for Trump, and then after, Trump didn't know. So I'm just simply saying that you know who's really bad, who's trying to totally put you in prison. And so I think we can reform the Republican Party. At least we have some shot there. There's no shot with the Democrats. They are rotting. They're beyond rotting. And so we can talk big picture about that. It doesn't mean we go along with bad elements of the Republican Party. It means we got pull here to actually turn them the directions we want. So why not be more optimistic and get what we can get out of something? It's not a lesser of evils. It's being a realist. So there's that. Anywhere else he wants to go. Nick, great to have you on Rumble at Nick J. Fuentes. Thanks for joining us on this live Wednesday, October 29th, 2025 transmission. Hope everybody watching on X and their platform shares the link, because that's what it's about to be, a Paul Revere as we battle the 1984 system with the spirit of 1776. But I threw out five or six topics there. What do you want to tackle first? I mean, maybe we should do Tucker Carlson first.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. We could get into that first.
Well, I don't know how I got the credit for setting it up, because, I mean, I do deserve the credit, actually. But no, I mean, I think you getting in his grill, and then, you know, him calling me and wanting your number, and then you guys talking, and me, you know, me saying, you know, Nick's misunderstood. I think you're wrong about these things. I mean, yes, I was the catalyst, said you really need to interview him. But I don't know how that was ever discovered, because I didn't say that I was the catalyst. So I wonder how that got out.
Well, you did tweet about it. You did say a couple weeks in advance, you said, it's coming. The interview's coming. Trust me. So
maybe that's why. Asking. Maybe it was trending. When is Nick on? And I said, okay, I guess I let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah. So maybe that's the case. But no, but I appreciated it. Yeah, I think you're kind of the bridge. You're the mediator. And, you know, you had just talked with Tucker before, and I know you have a good relationship with him, and I think you recognize that maybe we were talking past each other. I think you were uniquely situated, not just to understand, but also to maybe, you know, arrange this. You understood that Tucker Carlson's America first, I'm America first. Maybe there's a generational divide. He's from the institutions. I'm from the outside. I'm from the wilderness out here. And I think that you recognize that there was a big opportunity for us to de-escalate this and not go for the jugular with each other, and actually just have a productive conversation about where we legitimately disagree. And part of that is you need to actually press the flesh. You need to sit down and get to know the other person and talk and identify what each person actually believes and what you're about, you know, what each person is really about. And that's exactly what we did. We got dinner on Sunday night, and we met for the first time ever. And we had talked on the phone over the summer, but very briefly. So this is the first time that we really sat down, got to know each other. We spent a few hours together for dinner. I thought we had a really fun, great conversation. I think he got an idea of who I am. I got an idea of who he is. Of course, things are lost in the transmission when you're in translation, but also in the transmission when you're live, when you're on a show. When you actually get to meet the person, you get the real measure of the man. As we got to know each other a little bit. And then the following day, we had our discussion, as everybody has seen and commentated on. And I think that what took place was a real conversation. It wasn't scripted. It wasn't contrary to what people say, don't think it was a softball, but it also wasn't a hit job. It also wasn't an ambush. I think he asked some challenging questions. There are areas of disagreement, but we talked about it. We talked about it openly and directly, and where we didn't understand, we asked for clarification. And, you know, there were times, I don't want to say it was contentious, but we had some real disagreements. And I think the conversation was productive because we're able to ascertain exactly what the disagreements were. And we were each able to kind of say something about it. So I'm really glad that it happened. I think that it's a huge step forward towards unity. Because like you said, the 35,000 foot view, the big picture, especially after Charlie Kirk was killed. And, you know, I say this on my show, people can feel however they want about the actual assassination, who pulled the trigger, who was behind it, if there was a conspiracy. That aside, everybody on the left celebrated this. So people could say, well, it was organized crime. Well, it was a foreign government. Well, it was this, that, or the other. Okay, be that as it may, thousands of left-wing people celebrated that a young guy got shot in the face for talking about his views. And he was extremely moderate. And so I think that is really the context where you look across the way at somebody like a Tucker, from my perspective, or vice versa, or someone like a Matt Walsh, or maybe even for many people, someone like yourself. And they say, I think we actually have a lot more in common between ourselves than we do with the left, the neocons. We really need to unite and stick together. And sometimes it's going to be awkward and sometimes it's going to be uncomfortable. And, you know, there's egos and there's differences of opinion. And that happens. I mean, that happens when there's men involved. But I think we're starting to see the contours of a new movement taking shape, which is the legitimate America First movement. And the timing was interesting. Tucker did a really big show about that just the other week with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I thought he did a wonderful job fleshing out what the America First pillars are. And to me, those are going to be the guidestones going forward. So,
and I want to talk about that, but Green is a microcosm, or not a microcosm, an example of what happened to you. You're just a libertarian, Ron Paul, pro-America guy, and you're working over, you know, at the Daily Wire and all this, and they come in and try to indoctrinate you into Israel, take you there, make you their slave when you're just mildly asking questions. And you then on a journey become radicalized, as you would call it. Same thing with Green. They start bullying her over the last few years and saying you can't ask questions. And then now she's come over to you because of this behavior. And then you got to ask, why does Netanyahu do that? Why does he create so many Nick Fuentes's?
Yeah, which I thought was an interesting question. And the more that I thought about it, I sort of realized if Nick Fuentes were president or Tucker Carlson were president, he wouldn't like that. You know, Netanyahu would not want someone like me to be in power or anywhere near power. So you could say
that's an understatement. You
know, yes, to say the least. But I heard this sort of this insinuation that maybe Netanyahu prefers someone like me over someone like Tucker, let's say, for example. And I would say that to the extent that that's true, I seriously doubt that. But, you know, Tucker says that's the case. I think the reason that maybe the Israeli right sees some benefit out of me is as long as they can control the conversation, as long as I'm on the outside, as long as I'm yelling and screaming from outside the club and I have no real chance at getting any real influence or power, they're very comfortable maybe with the idea that I could be used as a bludgeon to cancel people, make people look bad, something like that. But I don't think they realize the gravity of the situation, which is that people like myself are now in the majority. And the conservative movement, as Donald Trump said recently, it's now a liability to be pro-Israel. And that's largely because I was one of the moral entrepreneurs, in the words of Overton, that was first to the party in saying that we have an Israel problem. There's a contradiction.
And by the way, your statement that you represent the majority of the party is that is not an overstatement. That is a fact.
It certainly is. And especially with the young people. That's the other dimension to it. Maybe less so with the older crowd, but with the young people, it is certainly right, left, and center. The majority share my critique of Israel. And I get messages from people I know all the time, people in college. They say, my friend is really left wing, like he's a Bernie bro type. He's a socialist, but he loves your clips because he loves what you say about Israel and he thinks you're really funny. And like that's like a thermometer. That's taking the temperature because, of course, just a few years ago, well, everyone hated me. The left really hated me. Many on the right were content with me being canceled. And so I think now that I am clearly ascendant, it's sort of undeniable that I'm bringing the ratings, I'm bringing the views, the young people are with me. Now I think that the pro-Israel side is deeply uncomfortable with this. And so that's why Mark Levin.
I don't know if they killed Kirk, but I've said you need to. I mean, if Nick Fuentes, God forbid, gets killed, I would then say the first suspect is going to be Israel. Or some crazy right wing loon that they brainwash. And so let's briefly speak to this, because I saw you talk about this the other day. I don't want to spend much time on these people, but we have the deranged left that has the mental acuity and psychological historical understanding of a goldfish. But you do have kind of a mindless, as the general public wakes up en masse, there'll be a certain trashy, criminal, mindless undercurrent that wakes up, and then all they know how to do is act like complete fools, say the most mindless things that actually discredit what you and others are doing, trying to move the Overton window, and then all they do is then attack and lie and say, oh, how dare you go on Tucker Carlson? How dare you say, that it wasn't Israel killed Kirk, and now we've said there may be some evidence that we're moving that direction. We're not sure yet. No, the left said we're going to kill him. The left celebrated it. The left owned it. Regardless, you do have these Trantifa doing things. So there is all this leftist violence. So the point is, no, they're like top suspects. We don't know yet. And we go, and then now they're covering up the trial. Now it's the biggest gag order ever. Now Kash Patel shuts down Kirk, foreign intelligence probe, an explosive feud with Trump's counterterrorism chief. That's coming up. We're going to get to this, because now I'm getting not just about Israel, but the whole deep state. Maybe the RNC had motives, like we talked about a month ago. My point is, we didn't have the evidence yet, but these people that, I showed up 31 years ago. You've been around over 10 years. That I've known of you before that, when you're a little kid, you're doing shows, 15, 16 years ago. So the point is, we have pedigrees. We're known. Our names are our names. You're really Nick J. Fuentes. I'm really Alexander Emmerich Jones. But it's this mob showing up, and I guarantee you, we know a lot of those are bots, a lot of those are feds, a lot of those are NGOs, and I'm telling you, that's who they're going to use to kill you or I or others, so they'll say it's some deranged right-winger. I'm very concerned about that, and you spoke to that quite a bit in the last few days, because it's really an issue, and I don't like Hitler, and it was an anomaly and all the rest of it, but those people need to know, as this happens, and if we don't fix this, and we go into another World War II mode, which I don't want to happen, all the scum needs to know there's going to be a Night of the Long Knives for the SA, for the Ernst Röhms, because the street thugs that kind of boil into this, as the aristocracy of a new system sets up, the obvious thing is going to be to cut out the retarded fat. Now, I'm using a World War II analogy into all this. Give us your take on that.
Well, I think what you're saying is totally true, and it's funny because this has been a conversation. I'm sure you've been having this conversation on some level for many years, just as I have. I mean, for the past 10 years, for as long as I've been doing the show, and we've called it many different things in my circles. We called it the optics war, and there's been all sorts of disagreements between Wignats and Groypers, alt-right and alt-light, all these different kind of things. And I guess the way that I would frame it is I would say that I am ruthlessly committed to realizing America first. I'm not here to do a show my entire life, although if that's necessary and that's what it takes, then I will do that. I am here because I actually want our people to have power. I want real Americans that believe the things we believe to actually have power and actually fundamentally change society. And I know there's a lot of people that they're not thinking that way. They're not thinking backward of what does it look like 10, 20, 30 years down in the road where we actually have political power, where we actually are the ascendant dominant movement. We have to think backwards from that and think practically, how do we get there? What's the roadmap? And I know there's a lot of people that are angry. There's a lot of people that are, they're getting red pilled. They're waking up, they're getting all these ideas. And I think that it crosses over into self-indulgence when they want to scream and yell, they want to do their best Hitler impression, they want to get really angry, they talk about political violence. And I get where the emotions come from, but as someone that's been doing this for 10 years with serious and ambitious goals, we have to put the emotions aside. We have to put that sort of thing aside. And anybody that is not—
We can't let the retards run the movement.
Yeah, precisely. And we can't let them sabotage it either. Anybody that is dragging us down or getting in the way, they are effectively operating on behalf of the enemy.
Well, let's be clear. Exactly. Maybe. Politically, populism, Christianity, resurgence of the West is in ascension, only allowing the dumb, mindless scum boosted by the left, who the left wants violence and the ultra-retarded right wing wants it. No, we're winning with ideas. Violence is not the answer, and they call you a sellout, you work for Netanyahu, you're a pussy, when they're not out doing engaged in violence. No, most of those are feds. That is a setup. And that's why they're saying you're an agent of Netanyahu, is because on the course we're on, we save the West, and these people, for low IQ or others who are bad actors, they don't want that to happen. They don't want us to actually take back civilization. They don't believe in victory. They're victims. They're failures. They don't have the understanding of the second, third, fourth, fifth magnitude order repercussions. They don't have destiny. And so we just have to be, you know, be sad for them, but realize we can't let a pack of scum hijack our movement.
I totally agree. I think we need to make it very clear that what we want to do is win. It's victory at any cost. That's what we're about, is total victory. And we want victory for America first. So me, I have no problem. My goal is not to appease or pander to a crowd of mindless type people like you're talking about. The goal is victory at any cost. And that means being pragmatic and being practical. And it means having, like you said, an understanding of second, third, fourth order consequences. It means having understanding of how these systems work. So I'm totally with you. And that's why I like to say on the interview with Tucker, my interview with Dave Smith, it's like, when we take power, we don't want to hurt anybody. We're not cruel or hateful or weird people. You know, and I even don't like the word radicalization. They like to say that I got radicalized because of Shapiro. I think I'm actually the sensible one. What's radical is the mass migration. What's radical is 100 wars for Israel.
I use that term as people know that term. I mean, I agree. The radicalization of that, trying to make you hate your country, hate yourself, hate your religion, is what triggered you to change course.
Right. And I understand using it in a colloquial way. I'm just referring broadly speaking. People like to kind of take my story and say, this poor man was turned into a monster and a villain because he was abused. And my message is always, I was right. I was right first. I was kind of right talking about mass migration, talking about Israel, talking about all these things really from day one. And it's just taken everybody else a little while to catch up. And you know, just as it was then, as it is now, we still don't have time for people that are sabotaging our efforts. And sometimes they do it through no fault of their own. I think you're right. There is a great deal of maybe there's federal informants or federal assets. I also think there's a lot of people that are social defectives. I think there's a lot of people that are just very emotional. Maybe they're just sort of not very bright. And unfortunately, we don't have the time or the luxury to take care of them.
Well,
we
also have to just sideline them. Feel powerful. Take people who have real names, real track records, who put skin in the game. People have come to our houses to kill us. We've been attacked. And then you say, no, they're not real. I am. It's like stolen valor. It's like if you go out and wear a Green Beret uniform and try to collect money at a Walmart and you were never in the military. It's stolen valor is what it is. And so I don't think, and I'm not trying to say I'm tough and I'm great and I'm wonderful, but I got one hell of a track record. You've got one too. I'm the real deal. I got skin in the game. I've left blood, you know, on the field. And there's just a bunch of people that are just as bad as the left that want to point at the strong man in the arena and sit there like a critic and claim they're good when we don't even know who their names are. They're cowards, and they need to be addressed, and they're anathema, and they're one of the biggest problems we face. And they're the people they're going to send to kill us.
Yeah, I think that's been the very small minority, though. I think for the most part, a lot of people that are anonymous, you know, they just don't want to lose their jobs. And so, I'm not really against anonymity.
I'm talking about anonymous people claiming you and I aren't real. When the results, you can't argue with.
I totally agree with you, and that it needs to be said. But I agree, it's a small percentage of bad actors. And the good news is, I think most people recognize that's what that is. They see that I'm on a generational run. They see me with Tucker Carlson, and they say the ideas are being mainstreamed. Like, we are winning, and it's a good feeling that the ideas are getting out there.
We spend too much time on those people. I want to talk about the EBT cards going out, the left that's degenerated beyond degeneration. I want to get into Venezuela. I want to get into Trump. Nick Fuentes is our guest. Share the live feed now. We'll be right back. I've been told for years to get bovine colostrum. It's the milk that a mammal produces as a cow in the first 2 weeks. It's the natural vaccine. It's super nutrients. It's growth factor. It's anti-cancer. It's everything. Ask ChatGPT what it's known to do. Upper respiratory tract infections and symptoms reduction. Attenuation of exercise-induced immune suppression. Antiviral and antibacterial effects. Stopping leaky gut. Support for gastrointestinal disorders, which is the whole body. Enhance recovery and reduce inflammation, metabolic health, wound healing, and tissue repair. It goes on and on. And we have the non-pasteurized, super concentrated. It is incredible. Get your bovine colostrum. The first run sold out quick. Back in stock. And when you buy bovine colostrum, the highest quality, the theoxygenstore.com right now, you get 50% off on all the other supplements, the methylene blue, the Irish Shea Moss, the Shilajit, the Ultimate Life Force, all of it. 50% off right now when you get bovine colostrum back in stock at theyellowshowstore.com, and it funds the second American Revolution worldwide. Now, I was out at dinner a few weeks ago after my dad had heart surgery, and my mom and my dad were ranting and raving about how great the bovine colostrum was they got. The last run sold out, but it's now back in stock for only a few days. If you buy it, already discounted, any other supplement, ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Spike Protein Detox, Ultimate Life Force, they're all 50% off any other supplement when you get the bovine colostrum that's so incredible that's back in stock. Here's my parents at dinner. But Mom, you were literally without me soliciting. You've been on colostrum now 2 months, and we have the very best at theultrashore.com. And I'm serious. I didn't bring this up. Tell us what happened. Tell us what happened.
I have been on colostrum for about 2 or 3 months, and a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50 however many years, and my hair is much thicker than it has been, and I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker, and this is brand new.
Turned darker.
And darker. Beautiful.
So who was it? Who's convinced you to take it? Steve Heinberg or somebody?
Mary Heinberg.
Yeah, they're really smart. Well, they're listeners. So, Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products. This is the first one that I can go, whoa, it really does work.
No, it's funny. I didn't even know the Heinbergs, I guess, because Steve and Mary, like a year ago, your house, like, you need to sell this. So we started, and we got the best brand. It's the strongest. It's no joke. The first 2 weeks of a mammal's milk is totally different. It's like magic.
That back problem was from when you were born. I have a pinched nerve or something. I've never really known
it. Well, you can blame my whole life.
And it has bothered me. And I just go through the pain because if you're going to have it, you're going to have it, right? There's nothing to do about it.
By the way, I haven't asked you this yet. Have you taken the methylene blue yet?
No, uh-uh. I'm scared of that.
Really?
I'm scared it'll make me like Roseanne Barr. Not that she's not wonderful. Just kidding.
You're afraid you'll be... Though she came on the show like 6 months ago, and she said, I don't know if I can do it. She felt sick. I gave it to her. She was bouncing off the walls 30 minutes later.
How do you proportion this
brand? Well, you know, for some people, a generic supplement choice that's less, you know, radical than the methylene blue, which is incredibly powerful, might make more sense. Something like a methyl drive, a power plant, ultimate burn even. But especially for talking about younger people, methylene blue is radically powerful.
Absolutely. And then we've got the Beauty Queens.
Yes.
Love you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. The answer to 1984. Is 1776. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
So I'll tell you a story that just happened Monday. So I knew that Nick Fuentes, Tucker Carlson interview was coming up when I was there, you know, weeks ago. Tucker's like, yeah, you know, it's set coming up, you know, at the end of the month. And then I worked late that night. And so I was really hungry, so I pull into Serrano's Mexican food restaurant in South Austin. I go in, put in earbuds, sit there for like an hour. I'm watching the first hour of the interview. And then I take the earbuds out, pay, I'm leaving, and I get in my car, roll down the window, I'm sitting there. And I hear Nick and Tucker Carlson, and I go, and I pull my phone out. I'm like, what's going on here? And the guy in a Ford truck next to me has his windows down with his girlfriend or wife, and they're listening to it in the car. That's when you know you're in the zeitgeist, okay? And that happened, Scout's Honor. I almost pulled my phone out just to show, but I'm like, it doesn't matter, I'll tell the story. But I just remembered that. So that is illustrative of the Great Awakening. And the fact that the Overton window has been moved so far, it's basically broken. And you know my critique, because Communist China is making its move. It's huge. There's other globalist interests. Israel's a big part of it. It's been the taboo. It's great that people aren't scared of the taboo. I overall see that as healthy. But what happens now that people are so anti-establishment that they don't believe anything they're told. But also a lot of the public, we were just kind of finishing up with that, have woken up, but they still don't have any depth or context to understand it. Because like you said, you were a little kid like I was, studying politics, loving it, being attracted to it. What happens to people that are just now waking up in this? And how does that paradox work where if we had a giant base of people that had depth, we could really fix things quickly? But it's also very explosive to have a huge awakening and then a bunch of people not distributed around the world that don't have any political understanding or even how to gauge it.
Well, it's a really interesting question, and it's something actually that me and Tucker talked a little bit about. And I think that you're seeing the pendulum swinging maybe back in the other direction, because what everybody recognizes is that 10 years ago, there was a dissent, a consensus maybe, that started to emerge, which is that the institutions had no credibility. The institutions, the media, academia, the government, they were all lying to us. And they were. I mean, there was a consensus that we couldn't trust them and that they had forfeited their credibility and legitimacy because they were lying. They were telling us things that we knew were not true, things that were not common sense. And when you push back on them, rather than correct the record, they just censored. They censored, or they called you a racist or a vax denier, you know, all those different things.
Or put you on a no-fly list or indicted you.
Right. They did all these kinds of things. And I think that only hastened the end of their legitimacy and credibility, because it showed that there was no ability for them to correct themselves. And so, of course, then the pendulum swung in the other direction. And this is why your show is huge. It's why Joe Rogan is number one. It's why Tucker's huge. It's why all the people in this sphere, in this community, comedians, podcasters, conspiracy theorists, extremists, all these people are now gaining so much currency, especially now that there's free speech. Elon acquired Twitter, opened it up, and now people are flocking to these alternative sources of information and opinion. But I would say, and I said this to Tucker also at our dinner, it seems that we're reaching maybe the high watermark of that part of the pendulum swinging. It seems like we're reaching a phase of exuberance and maybe a level of adoption where now it's going to start to swing in the other direction, because what you see, and you've alluded to this, is that people seem to be falling for a lot of red herrings and getting wrapped up in weird conspiracy stuff. I would say maybe the first iteration of that is like the QAnon thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like this comes out in 2018.
Oh, and I think it catches on. I was about to say Q is a prime example.
Right. And that was one of the first ones, and it was substantial and major, and it caught on because it sounded correct. There were a lot of questions the QAnon people were asking that were kind of legitimate questions. They were connecting some dots that were there. But of course, the whole conceit of it was false. You know, the idea that Trump is a shadow president, or, you know, that any of that stuff was real, it just wasn't. And that was maybe kind of like the first big wave of that. And I could even see with some of the criticism of Israel, it starts getting into theories like the Khazar Mafia, and it starts getting into the Frankists and like all these weird directions.
And the U.S. Capitol is actually 8,000 years old. And yeah, just total cuckoo town.
Right. The kookery, the Tartari, all that kind of stuff I would consider in the same vein. And so I think we're in a position now where either the institutions, they have a chance at gaining back their credibility, and I don't think they're going to take it, because you look at the moves being made in media, and like TikTok is censoring more. It got bought by Larry Ellison. CBS brought Barry Weissen. So they're getting worse, not better. What you tend to see in a situation like this is just classic tyranny, which is that the political movement or the political leader that is the most adept at manipulating the whims of the masses, that is the person that is going to rule the roost. And so whatever form that takes, I don't actually know if it's going to be left wing, right wing, economically populist, if it's going to have an identitarian flavor.
Well, let's quantify what you just said. To interrupt what you're saying, what you're saying is totally true. If the establishment doubles down, that is the wrong course for them. I'm not even defending. I'm saying for them, it's bad. But then you awaken a bunch of people, but they don't get informed about how things really work. Then it creates a black hole of insanity. And so that's why most revolutions go bad. Yeah, we're having our revolution. Yeah, we're awake to the bad power structure. But then you've got to have a new paradigm. You've got to have a new plan. And I think that's our job now, to present that.
I totally agree, because there's so much anger right now. But it's like you said earlier, it's sort of just like a mindless anger. And there's something... what they're getting at is right. Like, there is a mass awakening. There is a lot of truth going out there, but you can feel there's like a deep sense of chaos. There's like a deep, it really is like an I Am Legion kind of effect when the mob gets stirred up like that. And let's be honest, there is a lot of anger. There's a lot of hatred.
Thomas
there's
Jefferson
a lot of,
said the number one threat of tyranny is the mob.
It's true. And that's really what it is. It's stirring up an angry mob. And what I don't like about that is it seems that then the person who is going to appeal to the mob the most effectively, that's the one that's going to drive it. And in order to manipulate the mob, you need to be a sociopath. You don't actually have to have real beliefs. To manipulate the mob, you just have to pull these levers and push the buttons in a calibrated way, you know,
exactly.
Kind of manipulating.
You don't have to actually fix things. You just got to manipulate the mob.
Right. And that, I guess I'm becoming more worried about that in a way that I wasn't a couple of years ago, because the way things were a couple of years ago, censorship was so total and complete and the gatekeepers were so powerful. It's
yeah,
like,
you
look,
were the
we
revolutionary
need to-
then challenging the enemy. Now the enemy's falling. Now which is part of the process. If you're actually smart, now that we are coming into power intellectually, now we have to be the intellectuals. Now we have to be the aristocrats that actually try to save civilization.
Right. We need to catch the falling knife. You know, because we kind of blew the doors open. We're in the palace. You know, it's like the end of Dune 2. Like, we're there. We're in the throne room. It's very clear. But we need to be careful, like you said. And Tucker even talked about this on his show, too. It's funny how we're all kind of in sync on this. He said it's important that the, like an animal farm, that the pigs that win the revolution don't become like the human beings that came before, that you don't just get another iteration of that. And so how do you kind of have a truly new birth, like a baptize a new country with kind of like a new movement? And I think I said this on Dave Smith, the responsible and mature people, I consider you to be one of them, myself, Dave, Tucker. I mean, all these people, the responsible and mature people need to wisely guide the crowds, build something institutional, and kind of guide the country through the transition. It's not, the fight isn't over yet. We're still very much in the fight, but we have to kind of think about that day after. You know, that's kind of the
exactly.
buzzword
with
Gaza.
It's one thing to overthrow something. It's another thing to then build the new future.
Right. And you need to do them simultaneously. It's weird because, you know, a lot of people have this idea like, well, let's worry about beating the enemy. Then we'll figure everything out later. It's like, no, you have to be thinking about that
you
day
always
after.
You can't just oppose a tyranny. You have to have an opposing worldview and idea for others to adopt.
Yes, a positive vision. And that's really about what I've been working on,
well,
is trying to figure
that
out.
Then, and then I want to get into geopolitics and the shutdown, because the Democrats are betting everything on this. They're going to keep it shut down, folks. Their average constituent doesn't know you need 60 votes for a spending bill. Let's just start. We'll finish your point about what your vision would be, and then let's address the EBT SNAP stuff being cut off Saturday.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of my positive vision, I like to talk to the younger people to watch my show and say, what actually do you know how to do? Like, if we want to transform and become the American elite, we have to actually enter into the institutions and gain the institutional know-how. I know a lot of people watch my show. They could tell me the history of the Middle East and how Israel got us into every war and this and that and the other. It's like, but do you know about how government works? Do you know about how society works? Do you know the first thing about, you know, critical minerals, about the geopolitical landscape? Because if we want to create this cadre, this political cadre that is going to run the next regime or be the new elite, you're going to need to know a little bit more than that. And so I'm trying to get people into this idea that it's not just about taking away and subtracting and being anti and against, but it's about saying, what are we for? And what I'm for is we want America to produce things again. We want a tariff schedule. We want subsidies. We want to decouple from China. We want to make stuff in America. And we want Latin America, the Western Hemisphere, to be our periphery. We want to dominate the landscape here. And I think that if we can get things straightened out at home, and that means law and order, that means safe public transit, that means cities that are livable, that are prosperous, it means that we have industry, it means that we have control over the borders. We're going to have to re-migrate a lot of these problematic people that have come here in the past 20 years. If we can get things settled at home and produce things and be safe and be, you know, have kind of a predictable society again, then we could project power abroad and we can keep our civilization. That's kind of the rough sketch.
By the way, this it's gives really, me faith, because I know you're really smart, Nick, because I know a lot of history and I'm pretty informed. That's all I do. I know people that know what they're saying, people that act like they know, you know. And I've given you a few speeches on air and a few off, and I'm on. But I, so what I was saying was, I try to post something about China, 95% rare earth mineral control, which they've cut off now. And I'm like, I try to post a video. All I get is cover up Israel, Israel, Israel. Only thing. No, we can know all about Israel, oppose that. But to be real masters of this, you've got to know all of it. And people can't be territorialized and so mindless where they only know about that. You'd actually know what Israel was doing that was bad or other groups if you actually knew all of that. And this is the adult discussion because we are winning. We're getting rid of an old power structure, but now we have to be ready to intellectually bring in the new one that is not just sustainable, but is prosperous and you know, upwardly lifted and just amazing. And we are there. And so many people have been in the underdog position. They're not ready to actually lead and actually be in power. And that's where we are. So looking at the Democrats' plans, I think the best way to go at this, and then I'll get into Venezuela, and in your great realist breakdown, which I 100% agree with, what do you make of the shutdown? We're at day 29 20, or day 30, and the Democrats, despite the polls against them, going all in on this to cut off 40-plus million people from their welfare checks and EBT and SNAP on Saturday, and all the calls for the Podesta plan to be launched. I agree with you. This has got to be crushed. This is a premeditated insurrection plan. Looking at the angles, how do we counter this? How do we message this? What do you think's coming?
Well, it terrifies me that they're taking away the food stamps, because if that's legitimate and they take away all the food stamps, I mean, you're going to get civil unrest. You're going to get some serious problems over that because people are going to feel it. And, you know, in some ways, these types of problems are going to present over and over again because the government is insolvent. So this is a debate over whether we're going to raise the deficit $2 trillion, $1 trillion. We're getting squeezed. Interest on the debt itself, inflation, imminent recession. The government is getting squeezed. And what do you think is going to happen like in the future when there's just no money? And what's going to happen to all the benefits? You know, what's going to happen to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? So, but I think that in the short term, I think that the Republicans need to get control of the messaging. They need to get out ahead of this thing. It's honestly such a sad state of affairs that they have allowed themselves to be blamed for this, because the Democrats have made it very clear that they are pandering to their audience. They allowed the spending bill to pass earlier in the year, and their base was really unhappy with that because they said the Democrats didn't even put up a fight. And this is Ezra Klein in the New York Times basically said this. He said, we expect the Democrats to shut down the government really just on account of the Trump administration is doing things we don't like. So we're just not going to give them the votes. We're going to shut down the government just to pander to these radical insurrectionists across the country.
The right wing wants to ally with Islam and the left that wants to crash the country. And so literally Schumer is pandering to Bernie Sanders, AOC and Mondami. I mean, this is insane.
It is. And what exactly is the end game here? I mean, what is it actually that they want? I don't even know that they have clearly articulable goals out of the shutdown other than they just want to stop the government from functioning.
They're in total panic mode. Everyone, record low approval, record low campaign raising money. No, exactly. This is just pure throwing a fit. Trump should address the country and point that out. I don't think the Republicans they should be hardcore on this.
Well, and they're just so disorganized. That's what's disappointing, because across the board, it's an insurrection. They're getting in the way of ICE. They're getting in the way of federal law enforcement. They're attacking federal law enforcement. They don't want illegals to be deported from the country. Now they won't let the government function. And it seems like there's just not a level of organization or coordination or competence coming from the administration to get control of the situation. And I'm like getting flashbacks from the first term where it's like, the government is incapable of doing anything other than making these like gestures towards its base, other than making videos, other than, you know, trying to convince the base that they're trying their best. We want to see them do it. You know, Trump won. It's his vengeance. Like, he won in a landslide. He got the mandate.
Governor Pritzker for racketeering, for insurrection. He said, resist, fight, block federal agents doing their job. People want to see that. It'll fold like a house of cards. Indict that fat son of a bitch.
Yes, bring down the hammer. Bring down the hammer on all of them. And you need to be in the media. You need to have a message. And you need to have a whole of government
approach. The Republicans
are
still somewhat awake compared, but they're still in a bubble. No, there's going to be a national orgasm when the gloves come off. Because, again, I tell you, Cash, Bondi, they're not even bad people. They're cowards. They still believe the left has power. Crush them. They started it. They want to destroy the country. You explain this well. Crush them. Crush them. People want them to be crushed.
Well, that's right. Because, look, as long as the Democrats believe that they have hope in this situation, they're going to resist Trump. And in other words, that they're going to get away with it. That's really the problem, is they know the administration is never going to take it seriously. They know they're never going to face any consequences. Why do you think these idiots in Chicago or Portland are attacking ICE and DHS? It's because they know they're going to run away and there's going to be no consequences. And as this continues to escalate,
a Soros judge will let them out.
Right. Even if they get arrested, they're going to get released anyway. And so there's a word for that. They're becoming emboldened. And this is escalating. And the more that they're able to get away with it, the more they're going to escalate their tactics. And the federal government, as long as it keeps meeting them with half measures, we're just sort of holding hands, walking down the street together towards this escalation between federal and local law enforcement, federal and local authorities, and it's not going to go anywhere good. And that's why I said with Tucker, you need to get ahead of it and you need to crush it. And by crush it, that means swiftly and overwhelmingly. It has to be rapid, fast, and it needs overwhelming force. And the message needs to be, we're not playing. You can't resist the federal government. You can't resist federal supremacy. We're not playing around. And if the Illinois governor and Chicago mayor, if they want to try and jam this process up, that's unconstitutional. That's not the social contract. You're going to jail. You can't be allowed to do this.
Oh, look at Newsom. Monday, he says, the feds have no right to oversee elections. The feds oversee world elections. It's in the Constitution. Anybody can over-observe. The idea that the feds can't, again, people go, oh, you're being pro-fed. No, it's the federalist system. It's the balance. It's completely out of balance.
Exactly. And it's why it's like with illegal immigration. According to the Constitution, that is the federal government's purview to enforce the borders, not the states, not anybody else.
Pure jurisdiction.
Right. And they're not military. So you can send Border Patrol and ICE into the cities and you have to let them do their job. This is like secessionist Civil War kind of talk when they say, oh, we need to resist them. And you have these press conferences where they're standing together. That's a straight up insurrection. And the longer you let this go on, it's just going to metastasize and it's going to be harder to put down later in the future. And it's just going to get worse. So that's why I've said the admins got to come down and absolutely crush it. But it's like you say, they're too weak. They're afraid. They won't use the tools that they have. And this is why I was so critical last year. It's like deja vu all over again with BLM in 2020 or, you know, Antifa at the inauguration the first time. They will never take the gloves off and just put it to an end. And they need to. Like, that's the only solution at this point.
I agree. So I watch your show a lot. I mean, you do like 2-3 hours a night. I probably watch an hour a day, but when I'm driving and stuff, but your analysis, I don't know if you saw mine, but it's the same thing. It's the Monroe Doctrine. They're killing hundreds of thousands a year with drugs. They're funding the Democratic Party on record. They're manipulating elections. This is not neoconism, all the wars the last 30 years. This is realism. This is what we're supposed to do. So can you spend a few minutes on, because people say, oh, you sold out. Well, I didn't get a check. I didn't know that. No, I know the Monroe Doctrine. I know Thomas Jefferson, the Barbary Pirates, what he did. This is actually what you do. A country like Russia got encircled, got invaded. It fought back. Not saying Russia's perfect, but it's their backyard. They have a right. This is our backyard. What Trump's doing in Venezuela, I see, is constitutional. I agree with you that the response he can be set up by the CIA Bay of Pigs 2.0, and we can debate how it's done, but overall, his move, we're under attack. These are equivalent of missiles killing millions of people. You spoke to that. Can you recap that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, people, I say this all the time. I'm not anti-war, and I wouldn't even call myself a non-interventionist. I'm a realist. I think that the United States has this awesome wealth and awesome power, and there's nothing wrong with that inherently to use that power to secure the interests of America. And historically, what has always been the strategic interest of America is to control the Western Hemisphere. And the reason for that is very simple. We are not threatened by Europe. We're not threatened by Asia. A big reason for that is because we have the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean separating us. So, you know, any kind of invasion from a great power over there doesn't have a direct threat against the homeland because we would see it coming. They'd have this logistical challenge of crossing the ocean. That changed a little bit with nuclear weapons and missiles, but that still is generally true. And so what that means then is that in order for America to keep the homeland safe, what we have to worry about most acutely and imminently is the Western Hemisphere. You know, maybe Iran is not a threat because they're literally on the other side of the world, but Venezuela is close to home. Cuba is close to home. And the perfect example is the Cuban Missile Crisis. You have a adversarial, hostile regime in Cuba. And although the Cuban government is not able to challenge the United States directly or existentially, if they're allied with our strategic competitors like the Soviet Union, they could one day host a nuclear missile that's within striking distance of the United States. And no ABM system is going to be able to prevent that from happening.
And Maduro has 5,000 Russian missiles he's going to use. He's allied with China. He's running his mouth. He's the piggy bank for the Democrats. You want to cut the Democrats off? This is bigger than the USA. You cut that off. Exactly. So this is America first actually coming back. You're saying if you were president, you're looking at this, you see why Trump's doing it.
Yes, there is a vital strategic interest for Americans in controlling South Central America and the Caribbean.
Not going to the Middle East to blow up the Muslims and then ship them here for Israel. This is actually in our interest, you're saying, in general, but you're worried about how it's implemented.
Exactly, exactly. There's all the difference in the world. You go to Iraq to make a democracy. You go to Afghanistan to make sure women can vote. This is about making sure that in South America we have across the board, by the way. It's not even just in Venezuela. It's across the whole board. All these governments that are doing trade with China, they're doing trade with China, and that's the basis of a future strategic relationship. China is sending them weapons. They're investing in dual-use infrastructure, deep-water ports, radar dishes. These are all things
Panama Canal takeover. We're being encircled, just like the Russians struck back. It's literally under rule of law, war doctrine. This is what you're supposed to. This is default stuff.
Exactly. This is your vital American strategic interest. This is, you know, people say, isn't the purpose of the military to protect America? This is protecting America. These are the Americas. These are strategic interests. And so, and by the way, what's more, this has been U.S. policy for 200 years. It goes back to the Monroe Doctrine. And, you know, people like to say we shouldn't meddle in their affairs. We've been doing that since the Spanish-American War. We've been doing that since, you know, there were these banana republics. Like, we've always been operating in that way, and that's for a very good reason. I think that's a realist point of view.
But to be a finer point, the Monroe Doctrine is we don't meddle. You meddle, we come in.
Well, and more, I would say moreover that the Western Hemisphere is uncontestable American territory. You know, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with us meddling, actually. And maybe we might disagree on that, but I support meddling. I don't think that.
No. I get it. When we're opposed, when a force moves in, what China has, it's not even meddling. I get the meddling. I'm saying it's a defense. You have to do it. It's.
Right. Yes, I understand. Yeah. So if China's trying to come in here and you know why they're doing that, then it's our job to kick them out. So and like I said, just a little concerned about how we go about it. But
well, let's talk about that. We come back in 2 minutes. Then I want to get into critiques of the Trump administration and what's going to happen to Netanyahu and so much more. Stay with us. There is a white supremacy problem, and it's weird, old, elitist white people that are literally manipulating everybody, killing each other so they can stay in power. And it pisses me off when I sit there pissed off watching this, watching these wild-eyed, crazy people that want to kill me because what color I am. I know who brainwashed them. I know who wound them up. I know who sent them. I don't blame the dumbasses. No, I blame Carbo and John Podesta and the Clintons and Obama and the rest of them. That's who I blame. I know they got whistleblowers out the door at the DOJ. The problem is they don't have prosecutors with testicles to do the job. Can you feel the future? Can you feel the danger? Can you feel the destruction? I certainly do. But I don't think you dumbasses that serve evil do. See, you're in a new ball game. It's a new era. And you know what Thomas Jefferson said? The blood of patriots and tyrants waters the tree of liberty. And I don't want that. And there's a good chance we can avoid a lot of that. But not according to the left. They are just whole hog. Let's get it on. And so, you know my view. I think it's your view. Not out starting fights. Not trying to get in trouble. But if people are looking for trouble, they came to the right place. If you want a war, you got one. If you have some need to be stomped into the ground, well, you came to the right place with the American people. Because America was asleep, and you thought we were intimidated while you pissed in our faces and did all this to us. No, people were asleep. the spell is lifted. It's over. You need to learn to look at a weather vane and see which way the wind blows. It's blowing against you. And this wind, this headwind, is unstoppable. The only question is, are you smart enough to understand that? Surrender is your only option. Surrender now. Give up now. Stop now.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.